This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening, this is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Lichwe Lin. Tonight we're observing World No Tobacco Day and its theme highlighting the threat of tobacco to our environment.
So first we look at where we are with the tobacco endgame in our country. Have the anti-smoking campaigns worked as well as all the other initiatives? And then we explore the theme, examining the environmental impact of tobacco from cultivation to consumption.
Tell us, have you quit smoking? How did you do it? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08 and today is World No Tobacco Day. And let's start with the theme, which is tobacco threat to our environment. Now, this links the more commonly talked about issue of smoking and its physical harms to the larger question of climate change, climate crisis, and the impact that tobacco farming all the way to tobacco consumption has on our environment. So just to start off with some stats from the World Health Organization, 600 million trees and 22 billion tons of water are used annually to make cigarettes. And from this entire industry, about 84 million tons of carbon dioxide are emitted, which of course contributes to rising global temperatures.
Tobacco farming also involves the large quantities of chemicals, insecticides, herbicides, fungicides, fumigants, and that leads to agrochemical pollution. We're also talking, of course, as with anything else, when it comes to large-scale crop farming, of deforestation and land degradation. An estimated 1.5 billion hectares of forests worldwide have been lost since the 70s, and that contributes up to 20% of annual greenhouse gas increases. Meanwhile, of course, post-consumption waste is an issue, right? Because we still see cigarette butts on the street, in our drains, thrown out of cars. And the majority of cigarette butts do end up leaking nicotine, heavy metals and other chemicals such as arsenic and lead into the environment. They can take up to 10 years to biodegrade and they end up as microplastics in animal and human bodies. So that's the cheerful stuff about how tobacco impacts our environment. And now on to more cheerful but perhaps wider known stuff about how it impacts our health.
Yes, so I don't think we need to belabor this point. Most of us already know the links between smoking and diseases like cancer, heart disease, stroke, lung disease, diabetes, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. So in Malaysia alone, more than 27,000 smoking-related deaths are reported annually. And 4.8 million Malaysians aged 15 years and above smoke, according to the 2019 National Health and Morbidity Survey. Now, where we are in terms of combating all of this is, of course, I think the most recent development, which we are still waiting to hear more of in July, is that generational endgame that the health minister talked about, right? So essentially, once this is implemented, Malaysians born in and after 2005 won't be able to buy, possess or use any tobacco-related products. This includes cigarettes and vape. And this, of course, is hoping to address the fact that it is really addiction from a younger age that compounds addiction and the inability to give up smoking as they become older.
And that's going hand in hand with the longer term stuff that's been put in place for ages anyway, right? Denormalizing smoking, bans on the advertising, promotion and sponsorship of cigarettes, expanding smoke-free areas. And so the end game here, I think, there's the generational end game on the one hand, but there's also the other end game under the National Strategic Plan on Tobacco Control, which would see a target of less than 5% smoking prevalence by 2045, which is a reduction of more or less 15%, right, if we look at where we are now. So, yeah, I think that there's a lot to unpack, and it's a very complex conversation only because it's a worldwide conversation. A lot of the things that Malaysia is trying to do are also things that we see happening worldwide. There have been a lot of various studies conducted as to why it is that a smoking habit, a smoking addiction can be difficult to break. And I also wonder whether or not tying it to the environment is compelling enough for most people to look at their packet or look at their actual cigarette and think to themselves, no, I will stop today, you know. So it's an interesting conversation.
Yes, so we are really going to try and address it with those two halves. After this, we'll be discussing that generational endgame to smoking in Malaysia. And for that, we'll be joined by Dr. Helmi Haja Maidin, a consultant respiratory physician. Later, we will discuss the link between tobacco and the environment. But we'd like to hear from you. Have you quit smoking? How did you do it? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:14. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're observing World No Tobacco Day. First, we're going to be looking at our own journey and where we are with that aim to put a generational end game to smoking here in Malaysia. We'd like to hear from you. Have you quit smoking? How did you do it? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now, consultant respiratory physician, Dr. Helmi Haja Maidin. Dr. Helmi, always good to have you with us. Now, this year, the theme is how tobacco is a threat to our environment. Before we talk about policies and anti-tobacco campaigns, could you give us your thoughts on this idea to focus on the environmental impact?
The theme for this year, I think it's tobacco is killing us and our planet. So that was chosen to raise awareness amongst the public, amongst governments across the globe, to highlight the fact that, you know, there's significant environmental impact in when it comes to tobacco. And that's in terms of tobacco cultivation, the distribution of the product, and also of its use. Because if you pop by the WHO's website, there are like lots of statistics there. They've got statistics showing how we use about 22 billion liters of water to make cigarettes, how about 600 million trees are chopped off every year to make cigarettes. So you can imagine the impact in terms of deforestation, in terms of carbon dioxide emissions. And these are all things that in some way should not come as a surprise to us. Because besides the fact that you are having all these impacts and destruction in terms of the process and the use, then even the bit after someone has used a cigarette is also very damaging to the environment. Because cigarette butts, for example, they are the most common littered item in most parts of the world. If you go to a beach, you go to, you know, outside a restaurant, outside a pub, if you look at the cigarette butts that are there, these are things that take about 10 years to degrade. And when they eventually do so, they still end up in our environments, and, you know, it fills our environment up with microplastics. So there's a lot of awareness about plastic bags, for example, but perhaps less so, or perhaps you don't think about it as much when it comes to things like cigarettes. And that's the theme behind this year. We want to make people more aware of all the damages that is being done to their environment when someone smokes.
So how far along is Malaysia in our anti-smoking efforts?
The anti-smoking or tobacco control efforts have been going on for decades, and there's always going to be some incremental, I suppose, development when it comes to what we're doing. And we are very much, I suppose, doing things that are very similar to countries across the globe, and different things work for different people. So, for example, if we look at taxation works for some because it is going to help people quit when the price is too high. If you look at other things like, say, a ban in public areas, that will also help some people because that, I suppose, the difficulty in smoking is going to make some people want to quit. Sometimes there's a bit of a, I suppose, misconception or this expectation that when you introduce one single policy, it's going to lead to widespread changes or widespread decrease in the prevalence of smoking. But what we do know from our efforts and in terms of history as well is that every little helps. So by doing things in a very, I suppose, holistic fashion, by attacking things in different ways, from financing all the way to helping people quit smoking, these are the different things that we can do to overall reduce the prevalence of smoking in the country.
So how do our local efforts then compare to what's happening globally?
It depends very much on what you mean by how we are doing with regards to performances by other countries across the globe, because each country is at a different stage of their tobacco control efforts. You may have some countries like Australia, for example, or even New Zealand, which are quite far advanced. And you may have other countries perhaps like Rwanda, which may not have as advanced a tobacco control policy as we do. The key thing is when we look at the measures that are introduced by the WHO, they look at a few key elements. They look at whether or not a country monitors tobacco use, whether or not we are protecting people from tobacco smoke, whether we have programs to help people quit smoking, whether we provide enough warning and education about the dangers of tobacco, whether we're doing enough to enforce a ban on tobacco advertising, promotion, and sponsorship, and finally, whether or not we are raising enough taxes on tobacco products. So these are the parameters that the WHO has introduced in the past. And we are, you know, for each one of these particular parameters, we are doing fairly well. But as always, there's always room for improvement.
So has our approach to eradicating smoking evolved much over the years?
Some things do, because things develop both in terms of our understanding of the situation as well as the products that we're dealing with. So, for example, the challenges we faced maybe 3 decades ago when it came to sponsorship and advertising for tobacco, we are revisiting those same issues today when it comes to electronic cigarettes, because you may see that perhaps with the use of more online media, with social media and online advertising, it becomes a little bit more tricky to control and to counter all the marketing efforts that are being put forward. So things do change and things have to change. And we ourselves, in terms of policymaking, have to be very agile and very cognizant of all the challenges that we have. Because if we want to just keep doing the same thing all over again, and we do things that are not workable, or we do things that are not going to provide the outcome that we need, then we won't get the decrease in the prevalence of smoking that we are all hoping and aiming for.
Are there specific campaigns or policies that you feel have moved the needle for us in a significant way?
My personal favorite is there is a lot of effort being put in to help people quit smoking. Because at the end of the day, we are not wanting to penalize or fault smokers who are themselves addicts of a product that is, you know, very, very, very addictive. So if you go to jomquit.com, for example, there's a lot of effort being put in there to make people understand the concept of addiction, to make people understand how things like nicotine replacement therapy, psychotherapy are helpful in helping them quit. And if you talk to most smokers, they do want to quit. So it's helping people quit. And that, to me, is a very key element, especially as a doctor, where you want someone to start coming off these things that are very dangerous to their health. But alongside that, once again, in terms of policymaking, we are hoping to introduce a new bill in July of this year where YB Khairi Jamaluddin will be presenting this to the parliament. And the idea behind that is to essentially bring everything up to date so that when we do have a more holistic form of tobacco control, it will not only look at your conventional cigarettes, but there will be appropriate regulations with regards to electronic cigarettes, with regards to heat not burn devices, and that will hopefully allow us to control things better.
You mentioned earlier most smokers want to quit. As a doctor, do you see more people wanting to quit because of health concerns?
I suppose I'm a bit biased in the sense that, or rather, I may not be seeing the whole picture, because I myself, I'm a lung specialist. So by nature, a fair number of my patients have or are smokers. And as a consequence, you know, we do have conversations around it more often than not. I suppose if I look amongst my friends as well, my peers, there is, an increasing awareness of the dangers of smoking. There's also an increasing awareness of the fact that, you know, although most people want to quit, it is not that straightforward. And we have to acknowledge that, and we have to support that. You know, most people do quit a few times before they quit for good. And the key thing is to provide the appropriate support, the appropriate level of understanding, the appropriate amount of empathy in order to get someone through that journey and through that battle. Overall, I don't think education is the only issue here, because sometimes these are things that are more socioeconomic in nature. They are a bit more emotive in nature. So it's not as simple as saying smoking is bad for you, don't do it, right? We have to be a little bit more, I think, humane in our approach to getting someone to come off cigarettes.
So societally, in terms of a collective culture, are you seeing a move away from smoking being viewed as acceptable or even quote-unquote normal?
I would say if we looked at things today compared to, say, a decade or two ago, there is increasing acceptance of the need to stop smoking, and there is increasing stigma in terms of exposing people to cigarette smoke in the public or even in private settings. Even as we look back only a few years ago, when at the time that Dr. Zulkifli introduced the ban on public smoking, at the beginning, there were lots of people, you know, complaining about it. There were even members of his own coalition who were saying that it's going to make them lose votes. And that was a concern at the beginning. But as the months went by, you know, about 12 months after the policy was introduced, when we did further studies and surveys, you know, people were actually very happy with the introduction of that particular policy. People were actually more aware of the importance of clean air. They were happier to be able to go out, bring their family, bring their kids into an environment where, you know, they were not exposed to all these noxious fumes. So I think with regards to change in the society, there is an increasing acceptance of the need for proper tobacco control. And I think this boils down to not just implementing it appropriately, but ensuring that we give out this right level of information and education so that people understand the rationale behind any one of these particular policies or moves.
So a lot of the information on health risks isn't new to smokers. And as you've said, some of the messaging really by now has been around for decades. What are some of the main challenges still in eradicating smoking in today's context?
I think with regards to education, with regards to things like, you know, those pictures you see on the boxes, so there'll always be a small number or at least a certain percentage of people who will react to it, even if the rest of us may feel a bit desensitized to it. So these things do work. And once again, you're wanting to move the needle every, you know, as much as possible in as many different ways. The challenges are going to remain the, I suppose, misinformation and disinformation that's coming out from industry when it comes to what we need to do to reduce smoking prevalence. Whenever we are introducing new policies, new measures to reduce the amount of smokers and the amount of people dying from cigarettes, there's always going to be some feedback that is negative in nature from industry. And it's understandable because, of course, in their situation, they're looking at it from a purely profit margin point of view. But from a tobacco control perspective, as from a public health perspective, our challenge is always going to be to match the marketing might of the other side. And this involves being more strategic in what we do, being more cohesive in the way that we send across messaging. And this is something that we need to do constantly. This is something that we need to do tirelessly. And, you know, every little thing, every little success, I think, needs to be celebrated so that we don't lose hope and we keep focused on the goal of making Malaysia a smoke-free nation.
So you referred to this just now, the which is also being called one of the perhaps most radical strategies when it comes to eradicating smoking, essentially that we're looking to ban smoking for those born after 2005. Are you confident that this can stop the rise of a new generation of smokers?
I suppose, once again, I'm a bit biased since I'm advising the team on this. So I would be in favor of it. And the idea, or the, I suppose the principle or the philosophy behind it is to help avoid a new generation of addicts. We are trying to prevent current youth from being lifelong addicts for a product that kills half of them when they use it as intended. So you can start to see why we are wanting to restrict access. Now, as with all policies, it boils down to one, the, I suppose, how good the policy is, but also when it also boils down to the degree to which we're able to enforce it. And we have to be very clear that, you know, enforcement will be an issue, but it's something that we have to be committed to improving, because with good governance and with the appropriate level of enforcement, then we can restrict access to youth when it comes to becoming addicts to these products. The ban itself is one element of a few that will hopefully be approved by Parliament come July. And the idea is to not stigmatize, it's not to penalize or criminalize anyone. The idea is to help current smokers come off cigarettes to become non-smokers and to prevent non-smokers from ever becoming nicotine addicts.
So in a sense then, is the end game to completely eradicate the sale and use of tobacco? And do you think that's possible?
Idealistically, I would like to think so. Realistically, I think there will always be, you know, remnants of society where, you know, people still smoke no matter what you do. And most countries across the globe, you know, they're aiming for just like a 5% prevalence rate of smokers. So we want to keep it as low as possible. You know, we live in the real world. We live in a situation where people, you know, have the rights to do what they want to do. But what we want to take away from the whole equation is people being misled by false marketing, by gimmicks, into becoming addicts where they actually get their free will taken away from them. That's what we want to try and avoid. And when someone is a victim of these circumstances, before they develop any significant health issues, we want to get them to stop. So I think, yes, it is going to be extremely difficult to go to zero, but it shouldn't stop us from trying our best.
And in closing, what advice do you have for someone who's still smoking in 2022?
for most of my patients who smoke, I usually have a conversation about finding a reason to quit, because we all have different reasons for smoking. We all have different reasons to want to quit smoking. And I think when you have a clear mind as to why you want to do it, it's only then that it will be easier to look at the how. So it comes both ways. You have the physical aspect, you have the psychological aspect, but you can't neglect one or the other in order to get the outcome that you want.
Dr. Helmi, thanks for speaking with us today. That was consultant respiratory physician Dr. Helmi Hajar Maidin weighing in on the aim for the generational endgame to smoking. Let us know, have you quit smoking? How did you do it? After this, we'll be looking at the environmental impact of the tobacco industry. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Building fit Malaysians, BFM 89.9.
It's 6:38. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn, and we're marking World No Tobacco Day, which is today. Earlier, we discussed the plan to put a generational endgame to smoking here in Malaysia. After this, we're going to be widening the conversation to this year's theme, the link between tobacco and environmental degradation. We'd like to hear from you, though. Have you quit smoking? How did you do it? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Before we move on to our next guest, I think we have time for some messages.
Yes, and we have a lot of messages actually from former smokers. So Izab says, for 5 years, I was a two-pack-a-day smoker. I just decided to stop smoking one day. And it's been more than 20 years and I've not had a single stick. But the hardest part or challenge when quitting is the endless offers of cigarettes from friends who couldn't believe I quit smoking. I've heard this. I've actually seen this with people who quit. But also the other thing is, firstly, congratulations. But the other part of it is I do hear a lot of cold turkey success stories.
And good for you, right? Because as Dr. Helmi said earlier, it's actually the addiction that's the most difficult to manage. And in the case of Isham, actually, that's a great example of how often so much of your socializing and your social structure or your relationships may often revolve around your smoke buddies or doing particular activities that involve smoking as well. Donald, another one, I think, who talked about, well, not exactly cold turkey, but really their efforts in quitting. Donald says, I picked up smoking in my uni days. When I lit my first cigarette, I told myself that I'd stop smoking by the age of 30. I don't see myself smoking when I'm old. So come to 2 weeks before my 30th birthday, I said thank you to my last pack of cigarettes and I quit. I'm 45 now and I haven't smoked for the last 15 years. The first month was difficult because of the habit of smoking, so I used chewing gum to divert the habit or the craving. But ultimately, it's down to your own will. Anyone can quit. The question is whether you want to.
Again, Donald, congratulations. I am curious, I have to admit, partly because we're now in the question of the generational endgame, or in other words, stopping people from starting, right? We're no longer talking necessarily about quitting, but actually about saying to people, well, just simply don't start. And since you always had the intention of quitting, I'm curious why you started smoking in the first place. Because, of course, if you don't see yourself as an old person smoking, if you see yourself as, no matter what, past 30, I'm not going to do it, then why did you see yourself in your 20s smoking? I'm just curious, because I personally have never been curious about cigarettes. And because of that, I've never found it a like siren call that I needed resisting. And I'm always interested in why people start, because that now is the next part of this campaign, I suppose.
Meezy says, I quit smoking cold turkey for the one I loved.
There you go.
That's which I've actually heard a fair amount. And I always found that kind of a turning point for many people.
Yes, also when people have children.
Yes.
That's a big one. Rosalind says, I don't smoke, but I remembered many years back when cigarette prices started to increase, my colleague then just made a decision to stop. He calculated that his spending on cigarettes could pay for his new car. Additionally, all my relatives who migrated to Australia, heavy smokers as well, do not smoke at all there. But when they're back here, they puff. So yes, increase the price exorbitantly. I think Singapore does that too.
Australia always gets brought up in how the price of cigarettes actually was a large reason for many to quit smoking, particularly migrants who were probably used to it being cheaper back home. Shani, meanwhile, says, smoking ban in public places to, number one, protect the public from the harm of tobacco smoke. Number two, to encourage the smokers to reduce smoking and to stop smoking. Number three, to protect the children from exposure to smoking habits by preventing a display of smoking as a normal thing. And that third point, actually, I found very interesting. And I do think it's something that's changed. Even in my lifetime, I feel like it isn't as common anymore to sort of smoke around family or smoke in front of children as it was when I was younger.
I agree. I also wanted to say that I love that the span of the messages so far have been quitting for grand reasons. For example, love, or simply thinking I want to stop, or having some sort of life-changing moment. But the other part of it is more mundane, inconvenience. If you inconvenience people enough, that might be enough of a reason.
Keep those thoughts coming. Have you quit smoking? How did you do it? If you have tips you'd like to share or your experiences, you can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be discussing the environmental impact of the tobacco industry. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It's 6:44. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. We're marking World No Tobacco Day. And so we're asking you, have you quit smoking? How did you do it? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, the theme for this year is actually linking tobacco with the environment. And so that's what we're going to be focusing on next. And for that, we're joined by Dr. Nizam Baharum, Public Health Medicine Specialist and Senior Medical Lecturer at University Science Islam Malaysia. He was also formerly with the Tobacco Control Unit at the Ministry of Health. Dr. Nizam, thanks for speaking with us today. Let's start with, why is it important that we consider the effects of the industry from an environmental perspective?
Well, the environmental changes affects everyone, and it takes years to remedy any changes to the environment. So I think it's important that we realize how huge the changes that one single industry can make for the environment, and so that we can reverse, if we can, or try to minimize the impact of tobacco industry towards our mother nature.
So break it down for us then, starting with cultivation. How does tobacco farming affect the environment?
All right. So the tobacco farming actually impact the environment in many ways. For example, the farming itself use huge amount of land, where about 90% of tobacco farming takes place in developing nations. And China, Brazil and India are the largest tobacco leaf growers in the world. So globally, about 44.3 million hectares of land, of agricultural land, are used to produce 7.5 million metric tons of tobacco leaf annually. So this huge amount of land. And then when the land has become infertile or unsuitable for agricultural use, farmers will seek new areas for plantation. It is estimated that 1.5 billion hectares of mainly tropical forest has been lost worldwide since 1970s. And so deforestation is a huge problem with tobacco industry. And this contributes to up to 20% of annual greenhouse gas increases. So if you look at the amount of land required in producing tobacco leaf and cigarettes, it causes problems such as deforestation, which also contributes to CO2 gas emissions and also climate change in general. Of course, with this huge amount of agriculture, it requires large quantities of chemicals, such as insecticides, herbicides, fungicides and whatnot, and growth regulators such as growth inhibitors and ripening agents to control all the pests and disease of tobacco plantation. So many of these chemicals, they will seep into the environment, and they are very harmful to not just the environment, but also the farmer's health. And some of these chemicals, they are actually banned in certain countries, but are used in some countries. And the land degradation also causes loss of biodiversity. And the whole process requires huge amount of water, where it is estimated that 22 billion tons of water are required annually to support the plantation. And if you look at the curing process, the fact says that about 11.4 million metric tons of wood are required annually globally for curing process.
So, of course, it's not just tobacco, right? How do other substances that go into the production of cigarettes also contribute to environmental risks?
Okay, so if you look at cigarettes, you have the tobacco leaf, right? We also have the paper. So paper is used for rolling up the cigarette and also for packaging. And you also have plastics in packaging and also in the filters. So it is estimated that about 600 million trees are chopped annually to make cigarettes, including the curing process, to make the cigarette paper for packaging and so forth. So there's a huge amount of trees, yes, which can be saved if we don't have a tobacco industry. And then with regards to plastics and microplastics, the cigarette filters contain microplastics, and these microplastics make up the second highest form of plastic pollution in the world. So we're talking about huge amount of cigarette sticks and cigarette filters. And then the toxic residues from the cigarette smoke, they lingers in the environment. So, of course, the consumption of cigarettes, not just the production of cigarettes, the consumption of cigarettes also poses threat to the environment.
So does cultivation and production have any direct implication on the environment here in Malaysia?
Well, if you look at the environment, of course, you know the environment is borderless. Anything that happens in different regions of the world will find its way to impact the environment in Malaysia. So in Malaysia, we don't really have huge tobacco manufacturer anymore. We have small scale of tobacco manufacturing. So we don't have much in terms of emissions from tobacco manufacturing in Malaysia. And with regards to plantation, we only have small pockets of tobacco plantation in Kelantan and Sabah and Sarawak, but in very, very small amount because the soil in Malaysia is not suitable for tobacco plantation. So we don't really have cultivation and production much in Malaysia. However, as I said before, the environment, any changes in the environment worldwide will affect global changes in the world, including the environment in Malaysia.
And when we talk about the act of smoking itself, how does cigarette smoke contribute to air pollution?
Okay, the cigarette smoke contribute to the air pollution through the exhale cigarette smoke. So when you exhale cigarette smoke, that exhale air contain, nowadays is 7,000 known chemicals, of which 70 are carcinogens. So a report says that in a single year, direct emissions from smoking contribute about 10 of thousands of metric tons of known human carcinogens, which is a lot, including other toxicants and other greenhouse gases. So this is a lot of air pollution globally, cumulatively. But even without that fact, you know, if you stand next to somebody who smokes, you can feel the changes of the air quality. Yeah? So cigarette smoke does contribute a lot towards air pollution.
So what then do we also know about the amount of waste that tobacco products generate?
Okay, so as you can imagine, or as you can see everywhere, cigarette butts and litter of cigarette butts is a huge problem. And so about 4.5 trillion cigarette butts are littered every year globally. And these generate about 1.7 billion pounds of toxic trash each year. And it is interesting that the Consumer Association of Penang did an event recently where they managed to collect about 3,000 cigarette butts in Penang in about 1 hour. In just 1 hour, they managed to collect 3,000 cigarette butts. So it's a huge environmental problem in everywhere globally because of smoking. So if we can reduce the prevalence of smokers in Malaysia, we can eliminate the problem of cigarette butts litter, which contains a lot of toxic. So about 2 million tons of solid waste also collected from the packaging and the cartons and the wrapping of cigarette products.
So e-cigarettes are often branded as being a greener alternative, right? What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I can see why you think that, you know, why some people would think that e-cigarette is greener than smoking of conventional cigarettes, because with e-cigarettes, you're not burning anything, and then there's no cigarette butts to litter, and then the aerosol just disappear. And so you can think that e-cigarette could be greener. But if you look at e-cigarette, the main reason for somebody to vape or to use e-cigarette is actually to get the nicotine. And it is the new form of getting nicotine to replace your nicotine in your system, to replace your nicotine withdrawal, right? So if you look at where do you get the source of nicotine, it is actually still from tobacco plantation. So you can get nicotine from synthetic production in the lab, but synthetic production of nicotine is very expensive. So it is far cheaper if you just to extract nicotine from tobacco plants. Right? So the growing of e-cigarette industry worldwide and also in Malaysia is actually supporting the livelihood of tobacco plantation. And if the e-cigarettes is becoming even more popular, it's probably enlarging the business of the agricultural of tobacco plantation. So if you look at it, as explained before, tobacco plantation causes a lot of environmental damage. So e-cigarette is not as green as you think. And so e-cigarette actually probably promote and even increase the environmental impact globally.
In closing then, what would you like to see put in place to mitigate the environmental impact of the industry?
I think the best way to reduce the environmental impact of smoking and vaping is actually to reduce the demand for such products, to greatly reduce the demand for such products. And there are two main strategies that we can use to achieve this. Number one, we should help Malaysian current smokers to really cut down and eventually quit their nicotine addiction. So we can increase their knowledge and motivation and to help really help them to quit nicotine addiction. And so the Ministry of Health has established the Jom Quit program. So smokers can visit the jomquit.com and to get further information on what to do, where to go to, and how to help them beat their nicotine addiction. And number two is to prevent our youth from ever getting involved with nicotine addiction. And so this July, the Ministry of Health will table a new bill, a new Tobacco Act bill, in which one of the legislations, one of the regulations, is called Strategy GEG, or Generational Endgame, where it is proposed that any Malaysians born in 2005 and beyond, who will be 18 next year, they will be banned from ever buying, possessing, and using tobacco products, any tobacco products, including cigarettes, snuff, tobacco powder, and also e-cigarettes, which contain nicotine. So I think this is a bit of tough love policy, hard policy, but I think this GEG policy, it will save many, many, many future Malaysians from ever being involved with nicotine, including smoking and vaping. And I think all of us, smokers or non-smokers alike, should support this move.
Dr. Nizam, thanks for speaking with us today. That was Dr. Nizam Baharum, Public Health Medicine Specialist and Senior Medical Lecturer at University Sains Islam Malaysia, also formerly with the Tobacco Control Unit at the Ministry of Health, helping us understand the links between smoking, the tobacco industry, as well as the environment. And we've been discussing this because that's really the theme for this year's World No Tobacco Day, which is today. So we've been asking you for your own experiences. Have you quit smoking? How did you do it? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're getting plenty of experiences and messages already. We'll get to them after this, so keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.